The Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com, IgnitionAPG.com, PlayUSA at PlayUSA.com, and Sorinex Exercise Equipment at Sorinex.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefer.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefer's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefer.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this episode number 161. Super excited to have a friend of mine with us today, Justice Gallick. Justice is the head strength coach for the New York Jets. We go back to his Villanova days, and has a great story how he's gone from, you know, getting into the field to being a head strength coach at a young age at Villanova to getting a big time opportunity with the Jets and making the most of it. And so we have a lot of things to talk about. We talk about that. We talk about, misconceptions of NFL strength and conditioning. We talk about, training, everything from the vet to the rookie and things in between, and how he's able to form relationships and things like that. But just a great conversation, great guy. Lots of good stuff in this episode. Before we do, though, we want to make sure we recognize our sponsor, Sorinex, for this episode. Good friend also, Aaron Osmus. If you have not started following him, works for Sorinex and started the Pen and Paper Strength app, which is just a series of pictures of handwritten notes, handwritten workouts, and for nothing else, you're just going to get a great workout to be able to use in just your own training and things like that. But I mean, just some fantastic one-liners in there, and it's always good for a laugh. It's always good for great information, and it's what it's all about. And so Aaron's doing a fantastic job with that. Sorinex, I mean, obviously, anybody with Sorinex is a great person and doing things the right way and giving back to the community, all those things. And so I would encourage you, if you're in the market for any equipment, I would reach out to Sorinex. Check out their website, sorinex.com. If you're looking for some daily motivation, daily workouts, go to Pen and Paper Strength app and follow what Aaron Osmus has going on. Just a fantastic person as well. So I want to get to this episode with Justice. Sit back and enjoy, and we'll see you on the other side. All right, guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. Excited to have a buddy of mine on the show, Justin Gallick. He's the head strength coach at New York Jets, and we go way back past the Villanova days even. And I'm excited to have you on the show, brother.
I'm excited to be on. Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Justin, kind of, go back to those nose guard days, and talk a little bit about what got you into strength and conditioning and what's, the path that you've taken to get there to New York.
Yeah, going back to the playing days and even high school, kind of a lack of knowledge always made me want to find more knowledge. So, even in high school, I had a good coach. He started to get us into BFS and things like that. That kind of opened my eyes up to what's out there. Went to college at SUNY Brockport. Again, didn't have a strength coach there. We had a coach / strength coach. So the D-line coach ran the program and our head coach. But looking for more, always kind of searching for more, doing research, starting to find things, really just a hunger to improve myself. I was in the most athletic guy, so always trying to improve what I could do, try to get stronger. When I graduated from Brockport, I thought I wanted to be a teacher, and then I wanted to be a coach. So I got into coaching. I was a positional coach, coached defensive line for 1 year at Brockport, coached defensive line as well as strength conditioning at Dickinson College, a small school in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. And then I got to Villanova University. Again, as a coach, I was a GA / intern, whatever you want to call it, at Villanova, and basically enjoyed coaching. I love coaching. I love being around the players. There was an opportunity to move into strength conditioning. I was just always in the weight room. I was always in there. and the players saw it, the coaches saw it, and Andy Talley at Villanova gave me an opportunity to switch to strength conditioning. He also then gave me an opportunity to either stay in coaching or go strength conditioning, and you know, I chose to stay in strength conditioning. You know, and then really from Villanova on, I spent 7 years there. Great friends there still. Great program. Learned a lot. I learned a lot at Villanova of how to manage a small number of guys. You know, we didn't always have the biggest roster. And I learned how to manage guys real well, and I think develop guys over time. Not at first. I didn't know what I was doing. Had a connection here with the New York Jets. They got me in the door for an interview, came in as an assistant. Spent a year, about 8 months as an assistant before Rex Ryan promoted me to the head strength coach here. And then I was fortunate enough to stay on with Todd Bowles when he took over and remain on the staff here. So a bit of a strange journey. It's definitely not a normal progression. You know, I've worked under somebody for 8 months of my career in strength conditioning. The rest of the time, I've been my own boss. So very strange, a lot of trial and error over my time. But that's kind of what led me here.
Sure.
That's kind of my...
You know, I think that there's a lot of things I want to pull out of that. One is, I think being your own boss. I mean, as a strength coach, I think you would agree with me. And you know, this is what I kind of wrote about in my book, is that, you know, as a young strength coach, or strength coaches in general, we spend so much time in that technician stage where we're just focused just on learning about lifting weights and teaching people how to lift weights and things along those lines. But really the job is, I mean, that's the easy part. You know, give me a back of a napkin and I can write you a workout. You know, the hard part is managing the people, like you said. And really that's, you've been able to do that, you know, and grow exponentially in each and every, you know, all the way back from, you know, Farley Dickinson, or Dickinson College to there at Villanova and obviously with the New York Jets, and each one of those stages built on the other, so that you're now at the elite level and running the show. And I think the other thing is that, you know, so many of us are former athletes that, you know, kind of coaching is something that we've had to make that decision on, going one direction or the other. And I think, you know, probably you could have gone either direction and been great at both. But not till you chose one did you really become an expert in that area and take it to the next level, I think. And I think that's a place where a lot of young strength coaches that are listening to this are probably at, where you need to pick one. You know, eventually you got to pick one, or go high school where you can do both, or small college where you can do both. And so great journey there. Along the way, I'm sure you've made tons of mistakes. I mean, what's maybe one of the biggest mistakes that you've made, and kind of how you learned from it?
I would say probably one of the biggest mistakes as a young coach. I took over at Villanova. I think I was 24, maybe. So I took over as a head strength coach of a 1AA program. And Villanova has always been a good football program. They've always had success. So I took over there, and I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anybody in the business of strength conditioning. I didn't know. I thought I knew at the time. I always like to say I thought I knew everything. The older I got, the more I look back on what I did. Some of the stuff is stayed of what I wanted to do,
sure.
But the setup. So I think the biggest mistake when I was younger was not reaching out for help earlier. I think I thought I knew, like I said, I thought I knew more than I really did, and I was stubborn. And not till I had, I had a couple, a year of shoulders, I call it, and we had a couple labrum tears, and I had to relook at everything, and I reached out to people, and I tried to expand my network, and meet as many people as I could by clinics, and conferences and things like that, and try and just get more knowledge, again, because I didn't have anybody, like, to look at and say, well, this is how they're doing it, okay, I can take this from the program. I was reading whatever program I could find online, if I could snag someone from a transfer or something like that over the course of time to get, you know, your program or, you know, someone else in the country and be able to look at it and say, okay, this is how they're doing it. So I think really the biggest mistake was just not, you know, asking for help.
Right.
Say, you know what, I gotta look at this. I need some help before I get into this. And that's something now, fast forward to now, that I'm constantly doing. I'm constantly reaching out to people. I'm constantly trying to, you know, find more out you know, that I don't know. Programs may necessarily that are different. You know, I try to go out and find out how they're using those things and see if we can adapt them to our program. You know, just I think stubbornness early on was probably my biggest mistake, you know, not going out and asking for help.
It's a bit, one of the biggest signs of maturity, isn't it? When you figure out you don't have all the answers and you open yourself up to learn from so many great people out there. It's part of the reason why I do this show. It's an opportunity to talk to guys like yourself and just talk shop before and after and get better. And you know, one of my mentors, Mark Sonovich, would always say that, you know, at however many years in the NFL he was at that point, maybe 16 years in the NFL, he's like, he's just now learning to ask the right questions, let alone have all the answers, you know, and I totally echo that at this point in my career as well. You know, when you got to the NFL, you'd been college and you'd been on both sides of the spectrum, you know, in college, you know, you had probably some preconceived notions of the NFL a little bit, you know, and there's obviously being in it now and having coached on three NFL rosters myself. I mean, there's lots of misconceptions, right? There's the, you know, there's the guys don't work that hard or they do somebody else's program or they do whatever they want to do. And you and I both know that's bogus, but what are some of those misconceptions and kind of how you address those maybe with incoming staff members or maybe an external player coming in for the first time?
Yeah, I mean, so it's obviously a big thing. And coming from Villanova, I didn't play in the NFL. I never worked there, you know, at this level. So I didn't know. I was unsure of what to expect, if that's how this ran, if guys did their own stuff. And really, as soon as I got here, I saw it was just like, it was really just like my experience at Villanova. Players wanted to learn. Players are hungry to get coached. They want to be good. They want to maximize their potential. So I think, you know, the misconceptions are that these guys come in here and they do their own program, that they bring a sheet of paper in and, you know, their trainer comes in or, you know, their guy. And that doesn't happen here. You know, for us, it doesn't happen. And we believe in if we give our players a good product, that we won't have to, you know, deal with that. Is there questions asked? Like you said, when players come in from another team, yes. Yeah, there is. But I think part of it for us, and you already stated this too, it's our communication with the players. It's how we talk to them and how we sell our program to them that, you know, no matter what style of lifting, most of the time if it's a good program, it's going to work, regardless if it's Olympic lifting or power lifting or high intensity or some type of mold of all three. You know, when you put it in and how you sell it is what makes the program work. So I think for us, that's a big thing when a new guy comes in. Maybe, you know, he had a different, different style wherever he came from. We just try to educate them, show them what we're doing. And, like, fortunately for me, I've been here for going into my fifth season here. So I have a good group of guys that are a good nucleus that help me with that process. And they buy into the program. They've been doing, what we've had. And it works well. I think some of the other misconceptions are like, the players don't want to work hard. They don't push themselves. They just kind of go through the motions and collect paychecks or something. Well, you know, we know as well as I do that when you're sitting here, these guys want to max out. They want to be as good as they can. They want to win championships. They want to play as long as they can. You know, they want to go out on their terms. So I think a lot of that for us is, the prehab stuff and all that stuff that we do here. But, you know, these guys work as hard as anybody you've ever seen because this is their job. This is what they're doing. It's like, you know, people ask me that and they say, you know, I've had people say, I can never do what you do at the NFL level. And I'm like, what does that mean? And they say, well, you know, guys come in and do whatever they want. No, they don't. Right. If that's what you do, you know, if that, you know, at your place of work and in your university, if you want to choose to let your players do whatever they want, that's your choice. I don't let them do that here either. Right. So I think those are some big, you know, things that you don't know until you're here.
Sure.
And you see what they're doing and you meet these players and you see the passion they have. You know, I think they're probably the biggest misconception I'm always, you know, talking about and defending is, you know, when they come to work, this is no different than what I did at Villanova or you see at other, you know, schools, is that we're training them, we're coaching them, you know, we're rolling them out in groups, we're stretching them in groups. They go on for us, we do a bench and a squat is on an eccentric count by us. So we have 12 racks full. Guys are going down on our count, coming up on our count. It's very controlled. And we think that helps because the players realize, hey, we're coaching you up. It's not just thrown out there. So, yeah, those are probably the biggest misconceptions is, you know, the programming and how hard they work. But we try to, you know, I try to handle all those questions, you know, and answer them properly, you know, answer them, you know, the best way I can.
I always tell people that, you know, my experience with the NFL, what I've enjoyed the most about it was, you know, you're dealing with a more informed consumer. I mean, they've gone through a college program. They've gone through maybe another NFL team's program. Maybe they've worked out with somebody in the offseason. And they have kind of an idea what they think works for them to some degree. But you're right. I mean, what's great about it is that they're constantly, just like you're striving to get better as a strength coach by listening to a podcast like this, they're constantly looking for any kind of competitive edge, anything that's going to give them longevity in their career, in their profession. And they're inquisitive, you know. And so, yeah, if you're not very educated or you're not confident in your program, then yeah, they're gonna continue to question and look for greener pastures. But if you're confident, you got a great product, and you have a good message, and you hold people accountable, they're gonna buy right in just like anybody else. And so, I know you do that extremely well.
Yeah. That being said, too, like these guys, like you said, they're very knowledgeable. They have great college strength coaches. They have guys that they'll work with in the off season while they're not here per rule. But also, then you got every type of sports science or piece of gear coming into their laps because people want to get it in their hands. So, you know, we have to make sure our whole staff is up to date on what's happening in this, you know, current time. So we can answer questions. And I'm going to be honest with you, I never, ever put down anybody else because every program has merit. So I'm not going to say, well, you went there, well, that's crap, you know, that's terrible. Right. You're not what we're doing. There's good in every program, and I don't think there's anything wrong with some change up when they, you know, they do have to be away. But we have to be very knowledgeable on what's going on and who people are so we can have an educated conversation with the guys rather than just say no. You know, if you say no to a guy here, he's just going to take it as you don't know what you're talking about. You don't have knowledge of that product. But you know, most of the time, if you can argue it or have a conversation about it, where however you feel about it, they respect you a lot more for answering it truthfully.
Absolutely. What about with those, you know, so the CBA has made it tough. There's a lot of rules just like there is in college and things along those lines. When they aren't, you know, when they're in the off season and they maybe live in California or they maybe live in Texas or Florida or wherever, and you're pushing workouts to them, and you're hoping that they're doing them, or they're working with somebody in conjunction with the program. How are you going about maintaining that level of a year-round program versus just a 16-week in season and a 5-week off season program? I mean, how do you make your program year round?
Yeah, and that's a very difficult thing. You know, with the rules and everything, we can't call them, we can't contact them. So the workout, basically from their workout, we sent that as soon as the season's over, the day after the season ends, we have to have that program ready to run them up to the start of the off season. So they, you know, they get a off season book, and basically that's it. I mean, honestly, it's very difficult to know what they're doing right now. We have guys that might stop in and come here to train. But even with that, it's a dead period, like a college dead period. So you're really kind of hamstrung as far as what you can do right now. There are guys out there that run the book, and I do have guys that go to their guys that they've worked with before, and I'm fine with that. My whole big thing that I tell them is just make sure you're doing something.
Right.
Because the last thing you want is a guy to come back here when we start up April 18th, and he hasn't run, he hasn't changed direction, he hasn't, you know, done any type of lifting, which I've seen. That's my biggest fear. So, you know, when they leave here, it is what it is. I really can't control much once they step out of the building. Obviously, you know, it's like anything else. Some guys will stay in touch, and some guys you don't talk to again until they come back.
Right.
But we try to give them a good product before they leave so they have stuff. And, you know, we have a number of guys that will use what we give them, but we also have a number of guys that won't, which makes it very difficult when they return. Where am I getting numbers from? How am I percentage? You know, how am I recalculating percentages for these guys? So it makes it difficult. And you know, honestly, like I said, there's really not much I can do right now to monitor. You know, and from the NFL, from the CBA rules.
Right. Sure. during this time period, I mean, you got a little bit more time. It's not that you're sitting on your hands for 2 months. What are some of the things that you're doing personally to kind of get better and improve your craft while you're waiting for the guys to get back and for the season in the off season?
Yeah. So we spend time. We try to go places. So we try to go, whether it's clinics, visit some coaches at their place of work. Between me and my staff, we've kind of been all over the country this year, just trying to talk to guys, see what's going on, try to pick up some new techniques. And that's probably the biggest thing. And then coming back, and we also do research throughout the year, because there's in the season you might lift a group, two groups in the morning, have some time, practice, and then in the afternoon. So we have some time there too. So we're always trying to research. We're trying to find programs, techniques, new ideas, and we put them to work. I mean, the biggest thing with our staff is we're training every day, running, lifting, sprinting. We're doing everything the players are doing.
Sure.
Part of the thing for my staff is they're always going to be about 3 weeks in front of the team. So they'll be doing the workouts 3 weeks in front of where the team does them, just to make sure any kinks we have are worked out, even though the program's already been done probably about 3 months before we rerun it. And they'll be doing the same program as the team when they're here. And I think that goes over real well with the players. But, staff-wise, we're just always trying to educate ourselves and see what's out there. Again, talking to people, go visit people. And, fortunately for us with the downtime, that's something I wasn't able to do all the time.
Sure.
At the college level. But I can get out now a little bit and go visit people.
Yeah, that's great. When these guys all show back up here in a week or two, I mean, you got the wide range of ages now. You got you're going to have the rookies come pretty quick after the draft, and then you got your 34, 35-year-old, vet that's been in the league for 12, 13 years, How do you adjust your programs to be specific to that big age discrepancy?
Yeah. And again, for me, it goes back to communication. So I need to talk to the guys. The older guys usually for the most part, I've had for a little bit. They've been on this team. And then anybody that new that comes in, it's really kind of a debrief as soon as we sign them. What do you do? What don't you do? What things have you liked in the past? And try to find out what they like. And whether we use that or not is kind of, it might already be in the program. Or, some guys, a good example for us is clean. So we don't do cleans here, power hang. We don't do snatch or anything just because of what you just talked about, the age difference and then also the background of where guys are coming from. So that's always a question for me. And I have to be able to adjust and tell them what we do instead of that to create the same type of training stimulus. But with those older guys, it's really kind of seeing what they do and then also talking to them on a daily basis. How do you feel? How your knees, how your shoulders, you okay? Right. Everything good? And without being, too mom-like, but just trying to make sure that I'm checking in on them, making sure they're where they need to be. Like I said, where we're at currently, this will be the first time I don't have anybody older than me on the roster. So some guys are the same age, but, I think that's a big thing is just communicating with them, making sure, they know that we're looking out for them. And some of the adjustments might be, using a higher box for their box squat or their single leg stuff, maybe restricting the range of motion and finding a way to get the lower range of motion on something else, and taking the weights down a little bit. Maybe if we're working at 95% for a 23, 24, 25-year-old, maybe that guy who's 34, 35, they've been working off at 85% for the same reps. And just trying to adjust their total volume and their total load. It's probably one of the biggest ways we do it. A lot of guys, too, this, too. The older they get, the more they kind of want to stay. They want to stay with those young guys. So they don't want to, you'll be like, you want to get off the squat? No, I'm going to stay on the squat. And you know why? Because they got a young guy sitting there trying to take spot. And that's the motivation for them. But a lot of that, too, is so the recovery stuff, how we foam roll them, how we stretch. Those things, I think, also play well, and it's good for the young guys to do, but that's tiered towards the older guys to keep that mobility in their body.
Sure.
Yeah, but just a lot of communication, I think, is probably our biggest thing with the older guys.
What do you think, versus maybe the other NFL programs or other programs in general, what do you think is most unique about the New York Jets strength conditioning program?
I sometimes it's hard for me to say because I haven't been anywhere else in the NFL, and I don't go visit other teams.
Sure.
I think sitting here talking, knowing what I do, I think probably the unique thing that we do is we run a very, I always say, college-type program. That means we are micromanaging everything. So every part of the lift, there's a coach, there's a station, and we're really monitoring and trying to coach them the best we can. And I'm not saying anything about any other program in the NFL, but I know for us, that's one thing I think we do really well, and I've got good feedback from is, players will say, you turn around and there's a coach there. There's only four of us that are full-time here. One of them is a full-time intern. So we don't have a big staff, and we're dealing with 40 plus at a time in the weight room, which is it's good. It's a good number. But I think, the way we structure it and we can get them to buy into, hey, this is the way we do it here. I'm not just going to give you a card and just shoot you off and go through. We're not treating them like kids. We're treating them like men.
Right.
But the structure of this is really pretty tight. And, again, the players seem to eventually buy into it. Maybe, we've had things with guys come from other teams and they're like, what is this? And they kind of see, okay, this is how they do it. And they buy in. And again, if the product's good, which I believe it is, they buy into it.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Well, man, I know you're busy, brother. I want to get you going here, but we got two kind of quick resources here. What's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
Best piece of coaching advice I've received? That's a good question. I think probably, Lon Record.
Yeah.
Lon is at with me at Villanova, works for Hammer Strength now. But Lon was one of those guys that introduced me to you. That's how we originally met was through Lon. And he taught me a lot. I think the biggest piece of advice that he gave me, and it's changed the way I looked at things, because I used to just be like, I'm going to be honest, I used to say, well, powerlifting is the only thing, that's it. That's all you can use. That's it. This sucks, this sucks, this sucks. Now, and he, at the time, he's like, you got to look at everything. You have to at least try it to knock it. You can't say this doesn't work and you've never done it. So I think that's probably one of the biggest things best pieces of advice I've ever got was be open-minded, basically. Look at everything. You don't like something, try it. Right. Go try it. You don't like it still? Now you have a fair opinion. You understand what they're trying to do. You understand that philosophy or that technique. So I think that's probably one of the biggest things, just be open-minded, look at everything. You can use everything, and now I look at where I'm at now and we use everything. We use every type of technique you could possibly use. We don't do Olympic lifts, but we use some Olympic lift movements, but not necessarily with a bar. So I think that's probably one of the biggest pieces of advice I've ever got.
No, that's fantastic. Lon's a great guy as well. What about a book, app, and website recommendations?
I would say from a book, it's not a shows my age, I guess, but probably the book that helped me out the most was A Chance to Win by Mike Gentry. That I actually met him a couple weeks ago at East Carolina. He was down there at a clinic, and I said thank you for that book. It really just kind of put some things in perspective for me. At that time, I was saying I really didn't have many resources. That book helped me out a lot. From a website, I'm a sucker. I go Elite FTS about four times a day. I really do enjoy the articles they put out on that on their website. I think there's some interesting things there. They try to touch some different pieces of what we do, from coaching to training to nutrition and stuff. I do enjoy that website quite a bit, and then. From an app side, a little bit different, the NSF app, which is the supplement app, and there's also one called Aegis Shield, which I use every day to help our players find products that are clean. And I think, we all, know how the supplement industry is, so it gives me peace of mind. We can give that to the players. They look at it, and again, we're on that constantly checking things and just seeing, what's clear and what these guys can use. So those are probably my three.
Yeah, no, you turned me on to those two when I came and visited you over the summer, and I've used them almost every day since as well, man. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Brother, like I said, I've had a chance to come visit you in person up there, watch you work and talk shop and get to know you through the years and know what you're all about, and truly appreciate the way you go about your business and the way that you're doing it. And so, man, I really, really, truly appreciate you coming on and sharing with everybody today.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. It's an honor to be on. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.